Good evening. I'm WBGO News Director Doug Doyle, and welcome to the third and final New Jersey gubernatorial debate. This one-hour radio debate is being carried live on Jazz 88.3 FM and WBGO.org, and by our sister public radio stations, WHYY in Philadelphia, WNYC in New York, WBJB in Lincroft, and the NJN Radio Network. The three major candidates join us tonight. In order of they have selected to be at the podium, Republican Chris Christie.
Good evening.
Democratic Governor John Corzine. And Independent Chris Daggett. Our reporters asking questions tonight, WBGO anchor reporter Andrew Meyer, who is to my far right, and WBGO WHYY State House reporter Phil Gregory. Here's tonight's format. The candidates will have 90 seconds to respond to the questions, a 60-second rebuttal time limit for the candidate who gets the original question. It's up to our reporters regarding follow-up questions. As moderator, I will strictly enforce the time restrictions and the format. Each candidate will be allowed a one-minute opening and closing statement tonight. We'll start off with the opening statement from Mr. Christie.
Thank you, and thank you very much to WBGO for hosting this tonight and giving us another opportunity to discuss the issues that are so important in this state with the voters who will be making a decision in 12 days. In 12 days, you'll be making a decision regarding the future of our state and what direction we want to take. And one of the areas of agreement that the governor and I had when we had our last debate was that it is a very stark and a clear choice. There are real distinctions. No one can say in this race that there is not a difference between the candidates. There are real differences between the candidates. Our vision of New Jersey, the vision of New Jersey that I intend to put forward over the next 4 years, is one with a government that is smaller, with taxes that are lower, with a government that is doing what needs to be done for the people of the state, but not more than that. We are the most heavily tax-burdened state in America. We have the highest unemployment in the region and the highest we've had in 33 years. We need a change of course. We need a change of direction, and I want to provide the leadership as governor to provide that change.
Governor Corzine, your opening statement.
Thank you all for listening. As we face the longest, deepest recession in 80 years, I've been fighting for what matters most for the families of this great state. I've provided 100,000 children with health insurance that didn't have it before. We've reduced the number of uninsured by 150,000. We've provided record numbers of children with preschool, raising our standards for graduation, making sure we have the best performing high education system in the country. We've made sure that we use every dollar that President Obama has offered in his economic recovery plan and put it together with the first in the nation economic recovery plan that is turning the state's economy, the nation's economy, and we'll get out sooner and stronger. There are real choices. These results that I just outlined make a difference in people's lives. There's been much done. There's more to do. I ask for your support.
Mr. Daggett, your opening statement.
Thank you all very much. It's a pleasure to be here tonight. This morning, a Eagleton poll was released that showed that our campaign was moving again, moving up, getting more and more support. We're now in the low 20s, and my two opponents' campaigns have been going backwards since June. That's the only direction they've gone in. Mr. Corzine, because he has had a series of failed fiscal policies over 4 years that have led our state to near fiscal ruin, and Mr. Christie, because he's had a campaign that's been without substance and it's been lacking in intellectual integrity. Both have run very negative campaigns that have only turned people off to the whole election process. Ours is a campaign, and I'm the only candidate, has put forward a specific plan with respect to cutting property, income, and corporate taxes, and to address the many other issues that face this great state. I'm hoping that tonight that we will be able to continue to debate these issues and get to hear their plan as well as my plans.
Thank you very much. The first question of the evening goes to Mr. Daggett, and it comes from Phil Gregory.
Mr. Daggett, voters have indicated their top concern is the tax burden in New Jersey. What does state government provide now that we don't need? Can you name at least one program you would cut to substantially reduce government spending?
There is no one program that you can cut to substantially reduce government spending. Our problems right now are significant. We face a budget gap next year of some $8 billion, and we face a property tax and a corporate and income tax system and an overall tax burden that is very harmful to the citizens and is very unbalanced. I proposed a very specific plan to cut property taxes, income taxes, and corporate taxes, and to put a hard cap on municipal spending. And that hard cap on municipal spending will probably do more than anything else that we can do to keep our costs down going forward. There are many small items that we can deal with. We can do more with shared services in municipalities. We can deal more with identifying specific programs and specific opportunities within each department that collectively will add up to a good deal that we can cut by way of the state budget. But overall, the most important thing that we can do is to right the tax system that is so out of balance right now. And my plan has been both very specific about that, very detailed, and in the end, I think will make New Jersey a lot more competitive, a lot more affordable, and it will make jobs both stay in New Jersey and we will attract new jobs to New Jersey. So in the end, I think my plan is the kind of plan that we need to restore fiscal sanity and economic prosperity to the state.
Governor Corzine, your response?
Yes, we cut the budget the first time in 60 years, 2 years in a row. That's $5 billion lower than it was 2 years ago, $1.8 billion lower than the first budget I submitted. We've been reducing our workforce. It's down 8,400 since I've been here, and we have to keep that up. We've provided $7 billion, $2 billion more than any other governor, for property tax rebates, extended the senior property tax freeze. We are working on shared services and consolidations, first serious set of consolidations and closing schools without closing school districts that don't have kids going to school there. We're going to keep on pushing. And just like Mr. Daggett, we already have a cap on property tax levies at a local level. We're making a difference. We have to stay with it. We have to keep looking for every possible consolidation reduction in costs at the state government level, and we've done it. $22 billion worth of structural deficits we've eliminated.
Mr. Christie, your response.
Yeah. What we need to do is start at zero-based budgeting, first of all. We cannot presume that each and every year, each and every program deserves to be renewed and deserves to be renewed at any kind of increase at all. So we have to start with a different way to budget altogether in New Jersey. We have not done that before. I put forward some specific proposals regarding the property tax problem in New Jersey. It is not going to be a problem that is going to be fixed with a silver bullet. There is not one easy answer to this problem. Shared services is an important part of it, and we proposed a new type of grant program, a grant program that will allow municipalities to be able to study shared services, but there be an accountability piece to it. That accountability piece would be if you get one of these studies and they come back and show you that you can save money by sharing services, you're going to have two choices: either implement the plan and save the money, or pay the state the money back that you got to be able to do the report. Through that, we'll enforce some accountability with people who are getting these studies done. We just recently saw it in Medford and Medford Lakes, where a study was done regarding consolidating police forces there, showed it could save $8 to $9 million over 10 years. Medford Lakes refused it afterwards. We need to start doing things that are going to force folks to be able to share those services and encourage them to do it as well. We need to make sure that when we deal with all of the different budgetary items, that everything is on the table. We need to have pension reform, collective bargaining that is tougher and will get more concessions out of our state workers. These are the things that we need to have done in order to start to bring the budget under long-term control.
Rebuttal for Mr. Daggett.
Once again, my opponents don't have a plan. I've got a specific plan to cut property taxes by 25%, corporate taxes for small businesses that are the heart of our economy, as well as large corporations by 25%, and to roll back the so-called temporary increases in the income tax, and to put a hard cap on municipal spending. That is what people want in New Jersey. That is what I believe will help us balance the system out. We will extend the sales tax to a broader range of services that will make it more reflective of our service-based economy. And in the end, we will be much more competitive, much more affordable than we are today. I still am waiting for some specifics from either one of my opponents with respect to a plan about how to move forward. This is a very tough and difficult issue that faces us in New Jersey going forward. And if we don't address it, we're kidding ourselves if we ever think that we're going to restore fiscal sanity and economic prosperity to the state. I'm still waiting for that specific plan from both of my opponents.
Thank you, Mr. Daggett. The next question comes from Andrew Meyer and goes to Governor Corzine.
Governor, how much do you pay in property taxes, and do you think what you pay is fair?
Well, we pay, I pay something in the neighborhood of $35,000, could be $36,000. It is a high burden for not John Corzine as much as it is for a lot of folks that struggle with property taxes in this state. And we will do everything to try to get those lower. And in fact, we have laid down a very specific plan. We put caps out there, 4%. We're talking if we don't get the kind of further reduction in the rise of property taxes at the local level, we'll lower that cap. Again, we broke it from 7.5% down to 3.7% increase in the term that I've been there. We will increase our rebates back up to the $250,000 level. And if we have the technology and the ability, we'll convert them into credits. We passed the first school funding formula that was able to clear the court in 40 years. That's putting money into our middle class and moderate income schools, which is the major driver of property taxes. And we're making sure that we're expanding our senior freeze to cover more and more of our seniors. And we have done all of the things that I think will set in motion a substantial consolidation of school districts and will look for shared services. We're already giving grants, and we're making sure those studies are going
on.
And we'll make sure they actually happen.
Mr. Christie, your response.
My wife and I pay about $38,000 in property taxes per year, and it is an awful burden for anybody in New Jersey because we are the highest taxed property tax state in America. And, you know, there's a number of different ways, and as the governor just said as well, we have put forward a plan on how to deal with this, but our plan doesn't include increasing the sales tax by $4 billion. What our plan says is that we have to control expenses at the municipal level. We have to have a hard cap on expenses. We want to have an audit of all of the school districts in the state to go after what the costs of middle management are and administrative costs in the school districts across the state of New Jersey, and then be able to reduce those administrative costs by putting a cap on the amount of administrative costs that can be spent by each school district if they're receiving state aid. We need to do those type of things to be able to reduce our costs. And the property tax problem is not one that's going to be solved overnight, and it's not going to be solved by gimmicks. And it's not going to be solved by taxing more in one place you can tax less in another. Fact of the matter is the main driver of this is our expenditure of money. We have to get tougher on pension reform. We have to have health benefit reform and have people contributing more to their health benefits. All of these things are the drivers of property taxes, both on the educational side of property taxes and on the municipal side of property taxes. This will take a joint effort between state government, putting pressure from the top down, and municipal government and the citizens mostly deciding they've had enough at the municipal level and put pressure on their school officials and the municipal officials to stop spending so much.
Mr. Daggett, your response.
My wife and I pay about $18,000 a year in our property taxes. And yes, it's a burden, but it's no it's a much greater burden for people, frankly, at in the middle income levels of our society and in our state. Let's talk about caps for just a second. We haven't had caps of 4%. The average property tax increase every year over the last decade has been 5.9% on average. And the 4% cap that's in place now has an enormous number of exceptions. I'm talking about putting a hard cap on municipal spending tied to the consumer price index, and we're going to have few, if any, exceptions to that cap. That's how we're going to stop the property tax problem in New Jersey, is by stopping the growth that's been occurring for some time. I would also say that I don't believe Mr. Christie has a plan at all. I mean, he keeps saying he has a plan, but there's never any details about that plan. We need to see what each candidate is putting forward, and that's why I've laid out a detailed plan to do that. I've, by the way, put a property tax calculator on my website, so I no longer have to buy Mr. Christie that calculator I was going to buy him that we talked about in the last debate, because you can go on our website now and put in your property tax, and you'll see the property tax cut that you're going to get in every community in New Jersey by looking at that. And I think that is the kind of thing we need to focus on, is how to cut taxes, and I've got a definite and specific plan to do so. So I'm still waiting.
Governor Corzine, your rebuttal.
Thank you. I'll tell you a couple of things I won't do, which both of my opponents are suggesting. I won't cut taxes on the very wealthy and corporations and insurance companies that leads to pressure to rising property taxes on the middle class and lower income families across New Jersey. They're the ones that really suffer with these property tax burdens. And I'll tell you, one of the things that I absolutely wouldn't do, I wouldn't turn down $5 billion worth of federal stimulus dollars, as Mr. Christie has suggested, which would have automatically jacked up property taxes because of the failure to take the dollars for education, would have jacked up property taxes $2 billion. I know people are moving away from their conclusions on that, but the independent nonpartisan or Office of Legislative Services says his plan would turn down $5 billion federal dollars.
Phil Gregory's next question is for Mr. Christie.
Mr. Christie, New Jersey's unemployment rate rose to 9.8% in September. Employment fell by 12,700 jobs. Home foreclosure proceedings in August were 40% higher than a year ago. In addition to programs already in place, what assurances can you give to people who've lost their jobs and their health care benefits and may lose their homes, that the economic situation here in New Jersey will improve anytime soon?
Well, listen, the assurance that we have to give the people of the state of New Jersey is that we're going to change the course that we've been on for the last 4 years. You know, the governor just mentioned he doesn't want to cut taxes for business, even for small business. Well, how is he expecting that these businesses are going to create private sector jobs again? Private sector jobs are going to be created by giving these entrepreneurs more of their own money back so they can reinvest it in their companies and create jobs for people in New Jersey. Small businesses are the backbone of our state, and the tax cut that I proposed is one that will cut taxes for small business, because so many of our small businesses are subchapter S corporations and they file through the personal income tax returns. And so we need to cut taxes on our small business to help start creating jobs again. We need to make sure that we give people the kind of property tax relief they need in the short term, especially our middle class folks in the short term during this economic recession, to make sure they can make ends meet so we don't have an increasing foreclosure rate, as you mentioned in your question. You know, New Jersey has now an unemployment rate that's a full point higher than our neighbors in Pennsylvania. Now, there is a reason for that. The reason for that is the tax policies that we have pursued over the last number of years have made us non-competitive. So people want to know how we're going to reduce unemployment over the long term. How are we going to make it easier for them to stay in their homes? We have to do it by reducing the tax burden. We're the heaviest tax burden state in America, and people can no longer put up with the pressure that that creates, and that's the way we'll create more jobs.
Mr. Daggett, your response.
I hate to keep coming back to this, but the best way to keep jobs in New Jersey and attract new ones is to take care of our tax structure first. And, yes, we can cut corporate taxes on small businesses, which are the heart of our economy, as well as large corporations. We can roll back the so-called temporary increase in the income tax, and we can provide a 25% tax cut for property tax relief in New Jersey. And we can do it by expanding the sales tax to a range of services that are not now covered, that are primarily used by people of upper middle income and higher income earners. So in the end, we're going to have a system that is fairer and more competitive. That is what's going to attract jobs and keep jobs. Secondly, I want to invest in higher education. I've talked a lot in this campaign about the fact that we are the last state in the nation in our investment in higher education in the last decade, and we need to invest in new technologies of the 21st century, green tech, nanotech, biotech, the kinds of things that will bring the high-skilled and high-paying jobs to this state. I've proposed to do that by, through my property tax cut and the other sorts of savings that I'm going to have throughout the budget, I'm going to find the money to bring back our investments in higher education, which bring jobs to New Jersey, and importantly, to develop the collaborative relationships between business and higher education that we have never really done well in New Jersey, and we ought to start doing if we want to return to the kind of economic prosperity we've had in the past.
Governor Corzine, your response.
Thank you. Let me just point out that we've already had S-Chapter reform, and I don't think Mr. Christie has obviously followed what we've done with S-Chapter reform. What I'm speaking about is we shouldn't be providing tax cuts for insurance companies, a $100 million tax cut that Mr. Christie has proposed for insurance companies, big corporations, and the very wealthy at a time when we are struggling to make sure that we are still educating our kids, providing health care, and moving forward in a way that will prepare New Jersey for a brighter future, investing in higher education and other issues. The fact is, we have already taken steps to make our business environment far more user-friendly. There is a reason that DTCC Corporation is coming across the river and creating 1,600 jobs in New Jersey. There's a reason that Pfizer just last week announced after its merger, its purchase of Wyeth, that it's going to stay in New Jersey and actually expand its footprint. There's a reason Bosch Lomb is coming here, Bayer, Unilever. There are a lot of companies that are looking at New Jersey the way I think most people would. We have the best educated workforce. We're moving forward. What we can't do if we want to not have rising unemployment is turn down President Obama's stimulus funds that will drive job growth, 100,000 here in the state, and that's what Mr. Christie's proposing.
Rebuttal, Mr. Christie?
Governor, I followed subchapter S reform really well, but what I'm surprised you don't understand is that so many of those subchapter S corporations use the personal income tax to file their tax returns. And when you provide a cut in the income tax, it provides a cut for those small business people to allow them to grow more jobs. And that's what we need to do. And it's just astounding to me that you still don't get the fact that after being rated the worst business tax climate in the nation the last 2 years, you continue to say that things are going well here. You said we were turning the corner over the summer, but in fact, this past month, we've lost an additional 12,000 private sector jobs in the state of New Jersey, and unemployment has continued to rise unabated and has risen at a much higher rate and stands at a much higher rate than any of our neighboring states. And so we need a change of course. And these policies that the governor's been pursuing, I'm sure in good faith, but they simply have not worked, and we can no longer continue to pursue them.
Our next question is for Mr.
You're listening to live special coverage of the New Jersey gubernatorial debate on WNYC and WNYC.org.
...of the environment. One group has endorsed Mr. Christie, another is backing you, Mr. Daggett. Why do each of you think you can best serve the environment, and given the limited resources available, what programs are you proposing to improve those protections?
I've got over a 30-year track record of giving back to the state and about a 25-year track record of being involved in environmental protection. I've been the regional administrator of the United States Environmental Protection Agency. I've been the commissioner of the Department of Environmental Protection. I have served on the board of advisors for the Trust for Public Land in New Jersey. I've chaired my Open Space Advisory Committee in Somerset County. I have helped start my own township's Open Space Advisory Committee. And in the private sector work I've done in brownfields, I've helped save some open space that we'll, once cleaned up, convert to parks and open space. I have a long track record that is probably greater and deeper than anybody who's ever run for governor. So do I believe that I can do something to fix the state on the environment? You bet I do. And specifically, I'd point to two things. One, we need a permanent source of funding for open space, and I've proposed that through on the expansion of the sales tax to include shore and home and condominium rentals at the shore that will provide a $100 million fund to have permanent source of funding for open space rather than borrowing as we do each year. And secondly, I have proposed to continue to implement the reforms of the task force I chaired to improve the permit efficiency of the Department of Environmental Protection. We need to make the department more efficient and more effective without stepping back on environmental protection or public safety or workplace safety. I proposed a number of specific reforms in that permitting process, and we're going to implement every one of them.
Governor Corzine, your response.
I'm proud of our record in the environment. There is a fundamental endorsement of those policies by President Obama. He picked the person who ran our Department of Environmental Protection for 3 years, the only state commissioner who went into the president's cabinet, because we have a successful record, particularly with regard to climate change and greenhouse gases. We have installed more solar panels in 3.5 years than any other state other than California, more per square mile, more per capita. We just went over 100 megawatts. We have programs in place to permit out the largest offshore wind farms in the country, in America, in the North America, in fact. We are we're moving very strongly to implement what Chris Daggett, working with Lisa Jackson and Mark Mariello, the current DEP commissioner, to get greater efficiency. And sometimes when you push for greater efficiency, sometimes the people in the environmental community think you're moving too fast. We did something that's very important. We initiated a program called Licensed Site Professionals, which is going to turn the 20,000 brownfields we have now out of economic use into fundamentally positive economic participation in New Jersey's economy. We've done a lot in this area. Some of it's controversial, but it's absolutely the right thing to do.
Mr. Christie, your response.
Yes. I am I'm very proud of the fact that the New Jersey Environmental Federation has endorsed my candidacy for governor. And when doing so, they said because they were endorsing me because I had the most detailed and aggressive plan on environmental protection of any of the three candidates. This is the largest environmental organization in New Jersey, and they got to talk to all three of us and got to examine our plans and interview us extensively. Our plans are to return the DEP to their core mission. And their core mission is to protect our environment and to remediate those sites that have been abused environmentally in the past. And I will tell you that my history as U.S. attorney shows that I'm going to take these matters seriously. No one was more aggressive in the country on ocean dumping or river polluting than we were, returning tens of millions of dollars, not only from the polluters to help clean up those sites, but also to force those polluters to spend more money and donate it to environmental groups around the state of New Jersey who are doing those type of protections. We put forward a very aggressive renewable energy plan, solar panels on each and every landfill in the state of New Jersey. We've said it's time to end the fish kill in the Barnegat Bay and to appropriately cool the waters coming out of our nuclear power plants. We have said that we have to move forward, not as the EPA has now said, this Corzine administration DEP has been a failure on cleaning up the sites that need to be cleaned up. We will move forward and correct those problems as we go in the future with the support of the environmental community.
Rebuttal from Mr. Daggett.
I'll put my environmental track record against Mr. Christie's and Mr. Corzine all day long, all year long. I've got a long track record. I'll put any plan Mr. Christie has forward, and I'll match it because I have, and I've lived it. He said he got involved in stopping ocean dumping. That ended long before he was U.S. attorney. So the idea that he was involved in ending ocean dumping is ludicrous, frankly. We have to do a number of things. We have to be aggressive about continuing to clean up the brownfields around our state, in the cities and actually in suburban areas as well. But those brownfields are going to be, through their restoration, a major part of restoring our urban areas. We have to continue to be aggressive on water protection, air pollution issues. We have a number of issues that we actually have led the country on historically, but that doesn't mean we rest on our laurels. We've got to continue to move forward, continue to do the things that we've done all these years, and I will lead that charge like no other person ever has from the governor's office.
You are listening to the third and final gubernatorial debate here in New Jersey on Jazz 88.3 FM and WBGO.org, and by our sister public radio stations WHYY in Philadelphia, WNYC in New York, WBJB in Lincroft, and the New Jersey Radio Network, NJN Radio Network, joining us tonight. The next question is from Phil Gregory and goes to Governor Corzine.
Governor Corzine, all of you have condemned corruption in government in New Jersey. Specifically, what more can you do to prevent it?
Well, I think all of us would agree that anyone who breaks the law, breaks the public trust, should be held accountable. And I commend any and all that pursue taking down corruption in this state. That's why I appointed a prosecutorially focused attorney general, 252 indictments, 199 convictions, a lot of directly at people in my own party. The only folks from the legislature indicted are Democrats, five. We have many, many challenges going on around the state to make sure that we have a strong prosecution. I've also laid down the strongest pay-to-play laws in the country. We've made sure that at the executive branch and the administration that there are no bid contracts or out of possibility. We've ended dual office holding. We ended Christmas trees or earmarks, as you might know them in Washington. We've done a reform of the party system here in the state. Loretta Weinberg proposed, and I have recently signed transparency with regard to how to the democracy elements of party politics occur. And quite honestly, today we saw a conviction.
Time,
I took on Joe Ferriero myself
Christie,
long
response.
Before the federal sure. prosecutors.
Sure. Listen, over the last 7 years, I've committed my career, along with the careers of many, many valuable, bright prosecutors at the United States Attorney's Office, to putting a bright spotlight on the corruption problem in New Jersey and having success that no other office had in the United States. In fact, in 2006 and 2007, there were no offices in the state of New Jersey that had more corruption convictions than the District of New Jersey. I'm proud of that record, and I'm proud of the leadership that I provided those great people. And, you know, today, another sad day for the people of the state of New Jersey, as Joe Ferriero, the former Bergen County Democratic Organization chairman, was convicted of corrupting the political system in municipalities in the county of Bergen County. And the sad fact is this, that while I absolutely believe the governor is an honest man, and I believe he's conducted himself honestly in public office, the fact is that his money has enabled people like Joe Ferriero to be able to remain in power. And I'll tell you another thing. The governor mentioned this last week, and I didn't get a chance to respond. His attorney general's office has given out $90 million in no-bid contracts to lawyers during his time in office. And so the fact that he ended no-bid contracts is a fallacy. And lastly, as to ending pay-to-play will certainly be over, Governor, when you apply it to everyone. Apply it to the labor unions as well as all the other people you've applied it to, and then we'll have fair pay-to-play reform.
Mr. Daggett, your response.
Best way to stop corruption is lead by example. You know, we've had a number of examples of people who have broken the law, and they've been brought to justice, and we've seen that a number of times. But it's the corruption that occurs under the cover of law that is the biggest problem in New Jersey. Dual office holding, pension padding, double dipping, all the sorts of things that people do to game the system to become part of it and get something for nothing. We've got to end that process, and we've got to do it now. And when I say lead by example, I also mean lead by example with respect to things like pay to play. Both of my opponents have stood up and said they're against pay to play, and both of them have used money to get around the system. Governor Corzine has given loads of money to the county Democratic organizations, to nonprofit groups, to religious groups around the state. It is wrong in that it just breeds the idea of what's the money going for? How's it impacting the government? How's it making an impact on decisions? Chris Christie has had his brother give $200,000 to the Republican Governors Association in order to get around the system in New Jersey of $3,400 limit to then have that money spent here in New Jersey on negative campaign ads, just as Governor Corzine has done to help out with the Democratic Governors Association in raising money so that they can do it. So if you're going to live by pay-to-play, live by being against pay-to-play. Don't try to go around the system. So, yes, it might be legal, but we all know that the corruption under the cover of law is what we've got to deal with most.
Governor Corzine, your rebuttal.
Let's be clear. When I have written checks to the Bergen County Democratic Committee, it is not to Joe Ferriero. It's for purposes of electing Barack Obama and Al Gore and Frank Lautenberg and making sure that progressive politics is properly able to compete without all of this circumvention that I just heard goes on. We want to make sure that we are actually focused on making successful campaigns here in New Jersey. The idea that I have somehow enabled Joe Ferriero, when I stood up to him first, along with Loretta Weinberg, when he tried to run her out of the party, is just a joke. The reality is we stopped Joe Ferriero long before the federal government ever intervened because we wanted to do what was right. And I'll do that again and again and again when those opportunities present themselves.
A question for Mr. Christie from Andrew Meyer.
This next question has to do with arts funding, and in the interest of full disclosure, WBGO is a listener-supported station which has received contributions in the past from Governor Corzine and continues to receive financial support from the State Council on the Arts. In 2003, the state legislature passed a measure dedicating the proceeds from a hotel-motel tax to funding for the arts. The idea was that arts funding should never have to be threatened in the future. However, as the amount of money available has grown, what ends up in the hands of arts groups has shrunk as the state diverted the proceeds to the general budget. With the arts being such a strong economic engine, how can you justify not giving the arts what they're due?
You can't. I mean, the legislature passed a law saying that this is to be a dedicated funding stream to the arts, and I think it's a very simple matter. The law should be followed. It should not be circumvented in that regard. And so I don't think you can justify it. I think in the end what you need to do is to comply with the law that the legislature passed in 2003. And if you've dedicated a portion, as we have, of the hotel-motel tax to funding the arts deserve to be funded in that way. And I will tell you this. You're right about the arts being an economic engine in this state. They absolutely are. We are in the shadow of the New Jersey Performing Arts Center right here. And we know if you come down here, as I and my wife often do, to see performances, you know what a night at the New Jersey Performing Arts Center does to this area of the city of Newark, to its economic vitality, to the restaurants, to the bars, to all of the people who vend in this area. It really brings it alive. And the fact is that that's what we need to be doing more of and not less of. But all we need to do is to follow the law. And the law has been pretty simple and pretty straightforward. That's why Governor Kane spoke out, the chairman of my campaign spoke out forcefully against the diverting of those funds, because it's bad for New Jersey, but also because it simply isn't in accordance with the law. So I think we need to just say, if the state's done it this way, we made that promise to the people of the state that we'd use that money that way, we should use the money that way and should not divert it. And in a Christie administration, we would not divert it.
Mr. Daggett, your response.
Well, it's never acceptable to divert money from programs that have been set up specifically for one thing. We do that all the time in government in New Jersey among Democrats and Republicans, frankly. We set up programs. The biggest one that's causing a huge headache and will in a couple of years down the road is the Unemployment Insurance Fund. We raid all kinds of funds in the interest of balancing the budget through gimmicks and tricks and accounting games that we've played, and it's been through both parties, which is one of the reasons that I'm trying to get people's attention about the fact that we got to do better than we do today. But with respect specifically to the arts, I proposed, among other things, and this includes tourism as well as the arts, but I proposed tripling the tourism funding budget in New Jersey through the extension of the sales tax that I talked about to the condominium and shore houses, that will bring in a total of $130 million in dedicated funds, $100 million to the open space trust fund, as I said, but $20 million to tripling the tourism and arts budget so that we can promote the sorts of things in New Jersey that bring people and attract everyone. And in a bad economy is where people turn. They turn to the arts. They look to do things locally and to have an opportunity to take advantage of the cultural and historical and great ideas and programs that we have around this state. And we should also consider doing challenge grants to the arts again, where we challenge arts programs. If we give them a little bit of money, they go out and get some more.
Governor Corzine, your response.
We make the arts program robust as it once was.
Governor Corzine.
I want to get something straight. It complied with the legislation that was in place. There was full funding up to the number, and the adjustment was made in the budget to make that happen. This gets at the heart of what tough choices are about during the middle of a recession. I love the arts. I've invested personally quite seriously in supporting the arts here in the state of New Jersey. But when you have tough choices, when you have to make a choice between whether you're going to fund preschool, whether you're going to fund health care, whether you're going to take on the most core basic needs of our society, then you have to make tough choices. You can't reduce a budget as we did, $4.5 billion over 2 years, almost $5 billion actually. You can't do that without some tough outcomes with regard to some things that you care deeply about. I care more about making certain that we fund our food banks adequately, that we have legal services for those that are in foreclosure and don't have a chance to represent themselves in court. And what we have tried to do in a very, very tough environment is make difficult choices, and that's why those numbers are down. Not because we don't want to support the arts, but because in a very constrained world, we have to make tough choices. That's how we got the budget down for the first time in 2 years in a row in 60 years.
Rebuttal for Mr. Christie.
Sure. Listen, many of the things the governor just outlined are laudable things, and some of them are things that I would clearly support. But the fact of the matter is, the statute is what the statute is. And there's a poison pill in there to eliminate that tax if funding continued to go down. And instead, the legislature, through budget documentation, circumvented it. That's what happened. And that's just wrong. And, you know, when you people get a tax increase like the hotel motel tax, and they're being told that it's going to be used for a certain purpose, we have to keep faith with that certain purpose. We can't just do it when we think it's convenient to do it, when it's easy to do it. Of course we do it then. When it's difficult to do it, that's when we have to keep faith with the purpose that was stated when the tax was implemented. And that's why Governor Kaine spoke out so forcefully and so vehemently. No governor has been more supportive of the arts than Governor Kaine. I'm proud to have him as chairman of my campaign, and I am glad that he spoke out the way he did because he continues to be an honest broker on these issues.
The next question is for Mr. Daggett from Phil Gregory.
Mr. Daggett, the Schools Development Authority, along with the agency that preceded it, was created to build schools in the state's poorest districts. But it blew through its original pot of money before it even came close to completing its task. Given the current economic climate, can the state even afford to continue funding the SDA? And if so, how?
Well, first, the first round of schools development funding money, large part of it was wasted with consultants, high-paid consultants and architects and others. We frittered away a lot of that money, and I still don't understand how we haven't had a full-blown investigation of that, either legislatively or through the Attorney General's office or somewhere, because we have had nothing to account for where all those dollars went. So the first thing we have to do is get on top of what happened the first time. Secondly, we have another round of funding that's in place right now, and I, from what I understand, it's going better. But it's still, we need to make sure that the money goes to the schools, and when we get through with this particular round of funding, we ought to assess where we are and not necessarily put us in a, ourselves in a position where we just borrow more money. We also ought to think about how we continue to reduce the overall cost of construction, because we ought to, it's nice to have everybody have a really almost Taj Mahal-type setting, but we really can't afford that. So we've got to figure out how to provide good, solid settings that are warm, responsive, they're open air, they're something that the kids feel very comfortable in their learning, and the teachers as well. But by the same token, we've got to keep costs down and not have a lot of extravagant expenses associated with them, and that's the problem that we've had at least in the first round of the program. So we've got to figure out where all that money went the first time, make sure that the second round of funding goes well, and then reassess where we are at the
time.
End of the process.
Governor Corzine, your response?
Thank you. This is one of the great successes of people in my administration, not John Corzine, but people in my administration have taken the second round of funding. We've come in on time and under budget in project after project. We've built 52 schools. We reformed the SDA, put in controllers and a chief financial officer, and provided all kinds of checks and balances. We've gone to using the same architectural plans and replacement elements in various parts of what we do in one school and another school. But I can't think of anything more important for us to do than to make sure our children go to school in places where we show them the respect that is necessary for their future. And I one of the most meaningful experiences I had was 2 years ago when we were just about to decide whether we were going to go forward with an additional program, new funding. I went to Oliver Street School, which is down here in the Ironbound. I went into a school. It was built in 1869. The special education kids were in a coat closet. The other kids in second grade were in the hallways, and in the gymnasium, they had it divided up in fours by tarps. It was unacceptable. We have to make sure our children have access at the places that will give them a chance to succeed as well as anybody else, any other place in the state.
Mr. Christie, your response.
So there's a few things that need to be done regarding the SDA. We absolutely have to go back and have a complete and thorough investigation into what happened with the money in the first wave of spending. And it is simply unconscionable to those children and their families who need these school facilities that this money was wasted. It was wasted not only on a plethora of consultants and engineers and architects and everybody designing the school of their dreams. But there may have been other things that happened with that money, too. And we need to have a thorough investigation of it. And it has not been done. And that's inexcusable. And we will launch that type of investigation and make sure we put it together as best as we can when I take over in January. But a lot of time has passed. And when that time passes, it makes it more difficult to reconstruct those things. But moving forward, we have to go, without exception, to standardized schools. We have to go to two models for a K-8 school, two models for a high school, pick between the two. That way, the budgeting will be firm and set, and we can build more schools. It's absolutely right that we have to improve the school facilities in this state, but people are tired of paying an exorbitant price to get that done, with a lot of that money going to consultants and engineers and architects. And lastly, we should make sure that if we ask for any more money, that it's put on the ballot and voters approve it, and not look for ways to get around that, as happened with this second round of funding, which was not put up for voter approval and should have been put up for voter approval.
Thank you, Mr. Christie. Rebuttal, Mr. Daggett?
I have a doctorate in education. I have a great passion for education, for public education. I went through the public schools. My kids went through the public schools. And there's no question that we had good schools. There are a number of schools in our urban areas in particular that are, in some cases, over 100 years old and haven't been properly renovated. They have just got antiquated roofs and leaking windows in terms of air coming in that's cold in the winter or hot in the summer. We've got to do a far better job than we've done to providing good facilities. Why we have to have some model of only two. I don't know. Certainly suburban schools aren't kept to that standard. I don't know that we have to have 100, but something that gives them some opportunity to take a look and get something that that fits in with the design and their interests of their community, but does so in a way that doesn't have all the bells and whistles and extravagant types of design that lead to excessive costs. But we need to build schools, and we need to, again, figure out what happened to the money in the first time, adequately stay on top of it the second time, and
then make sure
you reassess after that time period is over.
You're listening to the third and final gubernatorial.
This is the live special coverage of the New Jersey gubernatorial debate on WNYC AM 820, 93.9 FM, and WNYC.org.
In Philadelphia, our sister public radio station, and WNYC in New York, the NJN radio network of stations, and WBJB in Lincroft. The next question regarding Lieutenant Governor comes from Andrew Meyer for Governor Corzine.
This election, for the first time when New Jersey voters go to the polls, not only will they be electing a governor, but also a lieutenant governor. Beyond being your designated replacement, what specific duties will you be asking your lieutenant governor to do so that they're doing more than just collecting a paycheck for keeping a seat warm?
Well, first of all, I am extraordinarily proud of the person that I chose as my lieutenant governor partner. That's Loretta Weinberg, senator who has probably the most uncorruptible reputation in the state legislature, ranks up there with almost anybody in the history of the state because she has fought and pushed back against the excesses that we've seen in the system, including against Joe Ferriero, as we were talking about earlier. The fact is, I will use her as a full partner in every aspect of governing. And in fact, I expect her to be at the table, all of our cabinet meetings and all activities. Now, there's very clear passion in Loretta's life on looking after the issues of children and families, making sure that the child welfare system that we took from the worst and put into probably as good a position as any child welfare system in the country now today, we got to make sure it stays there. We'll ask Loretta to make sure that we are continuing to pursue those kinds of activities. I want to make sure every child that's at risk, that has a need for preschool to have that. And I don't think that's babysitting. I think that's actually the most important foundation for education. We'll make sure that we carry out those programs to allow for all of our children to have that opportunity.
Mr. Christie, your response.
Yes. Monmouth County Sheriff Kim Guadagno, my running mate, is truly burst onto the scene, I think, in this campaign as somebody who is tough and articulate and smart and is going to be a very, very full partner with me in governing the state of New Jersey. I've given her some very specific tasks right from the start. First, she will head our red tape review group that will review both regulations on business and unfunded mandates on local governmental entities in the first 90 days of our administration and come back and make recommendations to me on how we can eliminate a number of those regulations and unfunded mandates to try to make business more affordable here in New Jersey and local government more affordable in New Jersey. Secondly, we're going to establish the New Jersey Partnership for Action. That will be a one-stop shop for business where we collapse any of the other economic development agencies or authorities in state government under that roof. Kim will chair the Partnership for Action, and she will be the person who will be in charge of that one-stop shop to help develop jobs, new private sector jobs in New Jersey, and to make going through the maze of state and local government easier for businesses. Third, she will be someone who will be the last person I will speak to on each and every issue. I selected Kim because she shares my passion for law enforcement. She shares my passion for doing the right thing and needing to go down to Trenton and turn the place upside down. And I think you saw her in the Lieutenant Governor debate show the type of intelligence and straightforwardness that you would want not only in a Lieutenant Governor, but in a governor if the case were to come.
Mr. Daggett, your response.
I selected Frank Esposito, Dr. Frank Esposito, who is the Distinguished Professor of History and Education at Keene University because several things. One, he's got a long and great track record of service to New Jersey in both higher education and education. He was very instrumental in the charter school legislation originally. He has served as acting president of Keene University at a time over two academic years where he had to absorb a budget cut from $102 million to $82 million, and he did it without releasing one faculty member. It shows you that you can do the kinds of things that he and I have talked about during this campaign, and you can do that successfully, and you can do it in a way that doesn't harm a lot of people and jobs, and we can keep the kind of services that we all demand here in New Jersey. I want him to be involved in both the education, higher education side, but also that, as I said earlier, will be directly related to jobs creation, because when we invest in higher education, when we do the kinds of things that bring in green tech and nanotech and biotech and improve our research facilities and develop better collaborative relationships with corporations to establish our research centers and to strengthen them, we will do the kinds of things that bring jobs back to this state, and we will keep the jobs that are already here. So Frank Esposito will be a very significant part of my administration, particularly in those two areas of education and higher education.
Governor Corzine, your rebuttal.
Loretta Weinberg has often been called the conscience of the legislature. She is certainly a person who carries the conscience of the values of New Jersey's families. I will use her on every issue that takes a judgment about the quality of individual. We're going to pick whoever the governor is in January, and I think that will be myself. The fact is we will pick four out of the seven Supreme Court justices. Those individuals will have much to say about whether a woman has a right to choose and what the constraints on that might or might not be. They will have much to say about what a thorough and efficient education is in the state of New Jersey. And it was very clear there's a serious contrast between Mr. Christie and myself. He chose Sam Alito, who is a fine man, but has a very, very conservative view on all of the issues that matter. I picked Stephen Breyer as an example of a justice that I think brings the
time.
Kind of judgment to that.
Thank
mayor.
You, Governor Corzine. It is time for our closing statements. Each candidate will get 60 seconds this evening in the final debate, this radio debate. We'll start off with Mr. Christie.
I want to thank WBGO for hosting this night, the questioners for their good questions, and for my two partners in this race for being here and agreeing to be here tonight to discuss the issues. New Jersey is at a crossroads, and my wife, Mary Pat, and our four children, Andrew and Sarah and Patrick and Bridget, we all have a huge investment, as all of you who are listening have, in the future of our state. I was born here in this city, in the city of Newark and lived here till I was five, moved to Livingston and went through the public schools and got a great education, and now have a great future in New Jersey for my kids as well. If we do the things we need to do, if we get government back under control, if we reduce spending at the state level and bring property tax spending under control as well, if we reduce taxes to make businesses more hospitable here in New Jersey and help them grow new jobs for the people of our state, if we do the things we need to do to lead, I know we can have a better, more hopeful New Jersey in the future than we've had over the last 4 years.
Time. Thank you. Mr. Daggett, your closing statement.
Our underdog, unfunded campaign promised to tell you the truth about New Jersey, and we have. We promised to provide a plan to cut property taxes, income taxes, and the corporate taxes that are making New Jersey uncompetitive and unaffordable, and we delivered. The election is now in your hands. There is one day every 4 years that you have the power to, you hold all the power in New Jersey, and that day is on November 3rd. Democrats and Republicans have made a mess of this state, and neither of my opponents has a plan to deal with it, and I've put that plan together. It's time to stand up for New Jersey. Many people have told me across the campaign trail that if they thought I could win, they'd vote for me. Well, I now have over 20% of the vote, and I only need 34%, 35%, 36% to win this. Now is the time. We can win this. We can do this. We can change this state and make it more competitive. Remember, it's never wrong to vote for the right person.
Time.
Please vote
Thank
for
you.
Me, Chris Daggett, independent
Thank you.
For governor.
Governor Corzine, your closing statement.
Thank you. I appreciate the listening audience tuning in tonight. Let me say, elections matter. Choices are real. The choices are very stark in this election between Mr. Christie and myself. I'll fight for what matters most for New Jersey families. You can be sure of that. We will make sure that we expand property tax relief for our citizens. We already set historic numbers of rebates for our citizens, expanded the senior freeze. Mr. Christie would have cut taxes on the very wealthy, on corporations and insurance companies, making it virtually impossible, as the Star Ledger has noted, to be able to provide that property tax relief. I'll move to make sure that every child has health insurance in this state. I'll make sure that we continue to provide early childhood education, the foundation of great results for all of our kids. I'll make sure we work with President Obama to make sure that our economy turns around sooner and stronger than other places.
Time.
I ask for your
Time,
support.
Governor. Thank you. Gentlemen, I want to thank all three of you for coming down to the studios of WBGO here in Newark. We're quite proud of our facility here, quite proud of our music and our news department, and we appreciate your cooperation and participation in tonight's event. We hope the answers you've heard this evening will help you make up your mind on this election day, November 3rd. We've touched upon the topics we think matter the most in New Jersey: the tax burden, property taxes, the economy, the environment, education, arts funding, and much more. We want to thank the staff members of the candidates for making this possible tonight and to give public radio the forum it truly deserves. We're thrilled that listener-supported public radio could band together tonight, thanks to our sister public radio stations for carrying this event, WHYY in Philadelphia and News Director John Hoban, WNYC in New York, with News Director and Executive Producer of News, John Keefe, as well as the NJN Radio Network of Stations and WBJB in Lincroft. If you've missed any of tonight's broadcast, well, we have good news for you. You can find the audio on our website. Go to WBGO.org, and you can hear the entire show later tonight. You will also be able to eventually see the debate on News 12 New Jersey. News 12 New Jersey will air the debate in its entirety tomorrow at 8 p.m. and again on Saturday and Sunday at 2 p.m. We want to thank News 12 New Jersey for being here tonight and taping this radio debate for us. Thanks to our technical crew, David Tallickson, David Antoine, Josh Webb, and our timer, Simon Rentner, and everyone else who made this evening possible. On behalf of my colleagues, Andrew Meyer and Phil Gregory, and our executive producer, Thurston Briscoe, I'm WBGO News Director Doug Doyle. Thank you for listening, and have a great night. This is WBGO Newark.